Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Saturday, a good coffee party Saturday to you all. Bobby Rodrigo sitting in for Egberto Willis. This is Politics Done Right. Want to get right into the show. I was very excited this week myself. I mentioned recently throughout various coffee party mediums, whether it was Facebook or the newsroom, that I had some things going on in Atlanta that was getting my attention, and I was able to participate in the economic development team meeting for Fulton County, which is the county where Atlanta proper is located, because there is a development going on in Atlanta, in South Atlanta by the airport, that is essentially green. It is the mirror to Technical North is how they're looking at it. It was a marvelous meeting with marvelous people. And the person who had brought me, got me the attention of it, is going to be one of the guests that I have on the show today. So I want to get into a little bit of background on my guest and let you know why it's important. Now, we have talked about throughout Coffee Party, especially when it comes to getting money out of politics and corporate control of us, et cetera. One of my big issues, of course, is Monsanto and the GMO labeling issue. One of my solutions that I promote in my activism is market-based solutions and also community-based solutions in that regard, as opposed to trying to get our government to fix something, because, of course, our government doesn't fix a lot of things. They just kind of make it worse, or they follow the almighty dollar to wherever it leads them, regardless of party. So when I see a market-based solution to anything that helps our society, I take a very close look at it. So I happen to meet today's guest, Kwabena Nkrumah, as part of an activism group that I work with that's also part of Coffee Party, the Coalition of Rooted Organization Projects, which is founded by Matthew Monk, who also has been on Coffee Party. I've interviewed them. Other radio hosts have interviewed him as well, marvelous young man, based out of Maryland. So Kwabena here in Atlanta, and come to find out that we have a lot of mutual acquaintances, friends, associates in the activism world. So we've been developing a working relationship and getting to know each other. So he brought me into this economic development team meeting on the basis of some things that I presented, and it was a marvelous meeting. And after that meeting, I went to an open house for his organization. And I knew right away, as soon as it started, that I wanted to do a show about the organization, because what he is doing, what they are doing, is extremely important. So I wrote a little information about it, and a lot of it has to do with, a lot of it was written by Kwabena himself and his organization. I kind of cherry-picked it so I could give you some accurate information, so I'll read it to you now. The show is Seeding Community Change, which is from Kwabena, becoming an entrepreneur, starting a business, is one of the most enduring and powerful myths in our culture. Captains of industry are lauded as saviors of society and too often portrayed as better citizens than the rest of us. This is not what moved Kwabena Nkrumah to launch Atlanta Food and Farm LLC, or AF2, as it is affectionately referred to by him and his team. Less inspired by the conventional Horatio Alger ideal, Kwabena was determined to find a pathway to greater wealth and well-being for his entire community, in addition to himself and his family and friends. Kwabena does not consider himself a business person per se. When he established the Food Justice and Urban Farming Social Enterprise, it was more about a personal transformation for him and other people that work with him, rather than simply earning profits. So today I'm going to introduce Kwabena and his organization to the coffee party and discuss how and why he did it, and why what he is doing in Atlanta is so very important, both in Atlanta and in other places. My approach to this is, of course, is that it's market-based. It is something that is being done by him, by choice, for the community. It is a for-profit organization, and it is helping people do this in a for-profit way. And some of the things that they have done already since the organization was founded is they are presently serving 23 different neighborhoods in the Atlanta metro area. And for those who don't know or haven't been paying attention or for whatever reason, Atlanta is no longer a town as it was maybe 20 years ago. It has the busiest airport in the world now. It is a huge metropolitan area. It is a real city. So there's a lot of people that are being affected by this when you have somebody like this serving 23 neighborhoods. The organization employs 15 people. It is him, but he has a wonderful team, and I'm going to let him talk about them as well. They have established two urban farms. They have authored three food system plans, and this is very important. As I'm learning what they're doing, they're working with communities, they're working with the government. It is a complete community package. So when they go out and try and put this together for the urban community, or any community, when they're putting together the urban farming and the local farming, it is all inclusive. You have the people who are actually involved. You, of course, have AF2, and you, of course, have the government entities that you have to deal with and work with. There have been some very wonderful policy changes and legislation within Fulton County and within Atlanta proper that is allowing this to thrive, especially in the standpoint of creating a way for the people who are doing it to bring their agriculture successes to the marketplace, which is what this is all about. So instead of having something that, you know, when you're talking about a transpartisan way to fix something, I believe that this is a great model in that regard too, because you basically have removed the arguments that happen from right and left. You basically have a bunch of people doing something together, but it's also helping put money in their pockets, food on their table. So you eliminate those handout, giveaway type aspects of the political arguments that we hear all the time, which is pretty wonderful. Some of the other things that have been going on is they have launched or resurrected 8 garden sites. And this is also important because Atlanta has allowed 15% of every state, every city park, any park, throughout the Atlanta area, 15% of it is allowed to become an urban farm. Now, that's a pretty significant thing if you think about some of the size of parks. When you're in wherever you live, when you see a city park and you see something like that, you just think, well, we could just take a piece of that and make an urban farm. And that's huge. So if you add that to all these other sites, and they're doing a lot of things with the school system. They're teaching children how to farm as well. And there actually was a school when we were at the open house the other day. A young lady came up and spoke, and she was from one of the schools in the city. And they are vegetarian platform schools, for example. So they're very much into the farming and vegetables and stuff like that. And they got connected with AF2. And they created a – because they knew all about the food and the preparation. They didn't know anything about growing it. So AF2 came in, and they established and helped them learn how to do that. So one of the things that they just recently did, as they were talking about at the open house, was they were able to take their the kids now we're talking about, were able to take their food that they had grown themselves and serve it to their parents in the community as part of an event that happened. And that is fantastic. And then, of course, we're talking market-based again. So you're selling the products and putting money in the people's pockets who are doing it, as well as whatever organizations or entities are doing it. So you're getting away from taxes supporting something. You're getting away from the government having to do anything one way or the other. Basically, all that the AF2 has been doing is saying, please get out of our way and allow us to do what we're doing, and here's our model, and this is what we're doing. And that has been working out very well. So to me, this is very exciting because, of course, the other thing that it does is that it defeats the Monsanto and the GMO industry, which is very, very important. The spotlights of the organization is they have let me, and I'm just reading out of the booklet for a second too to make sure I get it right. They are secured Atlanta as one of only three cities as prototype regions for the food commons. So again, the biggest industry in Georgia, for example, is agriculture, and that is the case in many of our states. And one of the things that has been going on over the years between the treaties, the NAFTA treaties, the TPP that we're fighting so bad, as well as Monsanto and the, you know, the genetic altering of food and so many other aspects of it, and the subsidy program as well when it comes to farming, has been interfering with the most important industry in the world, to feed the world, in this country heavily. So it's essentially, this is essentially bringing it back. So Georgia's agriculture is coming back, especially at a local level, which AF2, what AF2 has been doing is they've been bringing agriculture into the city to help, because from the standpoint of how the community, what kind of access the community has to good food, among other things, is horrid, actually. I was actually driving around with him the other day, and I was talking about, you know, how Atlanta, we actually were talking about Detroit briefly, too, because of what's going on there that is so drastic, but how Atlanta, it's more than just, it's not the ghetto type thing. It's nothing like that. It's just, what it is bad. And this is one of the sensational things that's going on that is making well. So without further ado, I want to introduce to the coffee party Kwamina Nkrumah. Kwamina, are you there?
Hey, Bobby.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm out here in the field, so I had you on mute for a minute, so I wouldn't have noise coming in, but I'm glad to be with you.
That's fantastic. I know you had mentioned to me you were going to be doing what you normally do. You're out somewhere in the field, in the dirt, and doing various things. It's fantastic. Welcome to Politics Done Right, Coffee Party Radio, and I'm glad to have you. And I was just telling, I don't know how much you were able to hear, but I was just telling everybody about our experience this week, both with the economic development people for Fulton County. And then I gave him a rundown of what I experienced at your open house to some degree, and some background about what you've been doing. And we're glad to have you here. And I have many questions for you. So tell me, first of all, what is it that you're doing today?
Well, thanks, Bobby. We're out at an event or a class as part of one of our initiatives that we manage and develop for one of our clients. The client is called the Food Commons in California. It's one of the best examples of a model how to relocalize food and create jobs in the community. So we're doing a program here for them called the Food Literacy Institute. The Food Literacy Institute, and you can find it at www.foodliteracyinstitute.com. And we offer classes in the community that are taught by residents and stakeholders in these communities, and sort of following the popular education model that's been made famous in South American countries to help instantiate the revolutions that may be going on, where people are taking control of their knowledge base by sharing skill sets with each other. So we set up situations where someone who knows a skill in the community can share it with their neighbors, and also create some income opportunities by the fees for the classes going to compensate the instructors. And so today we have a beekeeping class that's one of our free classes, so it's actually being taught by a professor from Georgia Tech who they have a honey beekeeping program there that is a multidisciplinary study initiative. But when the hives replicate and they need to separate them, they give the hives away to community groups, and that's how we formed this partnership with them. So we're here in Pittsburgh in the SWAT of Atlanta having a honeybee class in the Wells Street Park Community Garden.
Fantastic. You know, just to jump away from the main subject of the show, you mentioned the bee thing, and of course, anybody who's been paying attention to the food industry and the battles against Monsanto and stuff, there's been so many reports on how the bee community is being affected by what they're doing with between the pesticides and the genetically altered food. Can you comment a little bit about that and how important having the bee communities as part of what you're overall doing for our society?
Yeah, I mean, many of us have come to understand that our ecology is a delicate but resilient, under good right circumstances, interwoven network of interdependent relationships. So, you know, honeybees are at the center of human survival, in that they facilitate the germination, the pollination and germination of almost all, many plant species. And so the fact that this creature is at risk because of human behavior around use of pesticides and other impacts is one of the most suicidal things modern civilization has done. And so we're seeing decline of honeybee populations that are startling, and scientists have yet to really understand what's happening. But we do know that agriculture, the way it's being done, and so many of us are undertaking trying to repopulate honeybee hive population, particularly in urban areas where, you know, with the urbanization of the environment, there was already a sort of removal of natural habitats that make honeybees hang out. And so we're trying to rebuild those habitats and then, in some cases, actually, you know, create hives that the ladies can hang out in, because most of the hives are women, female species.
Fantastic, fantastic. So glad to hear that. Backtracking into you and your background first, please. The thing that gets me, and I know I've told you this personally, one of the things that I find most important about this is that these are market-based solutions, as you say, creating jobs, which is so important in our society right now. But you're covering so many different areas. First, I'd like you to talk about how you what the thought process was and how you came to be where you are from a start. You know, what made you think about doing this, starting it?
I came to this couple of different ways. I initially was turned on to agriculture as an expression of my black nationalism of my youth, and I still consider myself black nationalist, but there's a different flavor to it after years of trying to understand how to really have an impact on the empowerment of black communities in particular. And so initially it was sort of like, you know, I'm going to go back to Africa and try to help rebuild African nations, post-colonial African nations, and trying to choose a skill set that was most critical and necessary, and agriculture, of course, fit that bill. And so my mentor, who sort of helped me think through this at the time, Dr. Mudavana, you know, suggested I go to Tuskegee University that has, you know, a long tradition of agricultural excellence in the black college world, and that's what I did. My hometown is Boston, Massachusetts, and left there in 1989 after high school, and went to Tuskegee to study plant and soil sciences in their ag department. But the thing that I, you know, learned quickly is that agriculture education at all levels has been sort of been co-opted by in the industrial agricultural system. And so the land-grant universities, the 1890 schools, which are the black versions of the land-grant university system, are beholden unto Monsanto, Conagra, and all the other big chemical or input or companies. And the research and the training you receive at those schools are really just about preparing you to work for those corporations. They're definitely not helping you create independent, sustainable African countries or even black communities. And so, and now that's a really broad statement, but there is some work in between being done, particularly at the black schools by some of the great traditions there. But overall, the system services the industrial agricultural system. So there was nothing I was being taught at Tuskegee was really helping me feed people directly. I was in a laboratory doing tissue culture research, how to cut a piece of a plant, put it into some agar solution under a hood and repropagate it into a callus, which differentiates into a plant for some obscure, you know, biotech purpose. And then I was, you know, doing hydroponic sweet potato growing so NASA could lighten the payload for the shuttle so the astronauts could grow food in space. So these things just weren't, you know, addressing what I was interested in. So I dropped out. And through a long journey in 1997 in Houston, Texas, is when I learned about urban agriculture as an alternative to industrial agriculture at the first annual Southwestern Texas Urban Agricultural Conference put on by Urban Harvest, a really pioneering nonprofit in Houston. And its founder, Dr. Bob Randall, became a mentor of mine and really helped bring me into what has become my life's work. And ever since then, I've been on this journey of trying to connect my community building, community organizing roots that were part of my life since I was a teenager in Boston to this sort of very specific solution-oriented piece of work, urban agriculture and local food.
That's fantastic. And when you got the model for AF2, one of the things that I'd like you to talk about is the team that you've been able to put together. Because it was for me, it was impressive. And the more that you do this, discuss it and stuff, I think other people are going to agree that this is an impressive approach, and they're going to pay attention to you. So I'd like you to talk a little bit about that, please.
Sorry, I had to put you on. I put you on silent for a minute to put on my bee hat. can you repeat the question for once? I'm trying, you know, multitasking here.
That's okay. No problem. What I was saying is that when I was at your open house, one of the things that was so impressive was the team that you had put together. The people that have come to join AF2 and where you're going, and I'd like you to talk a little bit about that because I think it's important people understand that this is, you know, something that a lot of people are working on that are extremely talented.
Yeah, thank you. So Atlanta Food and Farm, or AF2 as we say for short, is what I call an open source social enterprise company. And for us, that means we try to eliminate any barriers for folks to participate, and that even being payroll, which is to say, you know, we have structures and spaces in our business model for people to engage that, you know, short of employment, which allows us to have more people involved, and you know, even as we continue to build overhead to actually hire people. So, you know, our company is ran by teams. In teams, we have six different divisions of the company that have teams associated with them: planning and policy, garden and farm development, nutrition and wellness, etc. And people can join those teams in any way that fits their situation, meaning that if you're looking for work, if we have contracts that we can provide billable hours for you, then, you know, we can bring you in as either a partner, associate, or staff. But if we don't have billable hours for you, you know, you can join as a volunteer, you can join as an intern, and you can just join as a business partner and participate in that team, examining our projects, getting involved in us, making proposals,
and find the opportunity as it fits you, whether you're looking for education, just learn the business, or whether you're actually looking for income. You can find that space for yourself in our open source business model. There's no, there's not very much information that we keep to ourselves, except maybe, you know, when we're first trying to pitch a proposal in some proprietary period. But for the most part, because we're trying to build food sovereignty, food solutions, we want anything we know to be out in the public sphere. And so anybody's allowed to participate in our team. Most of them are done by Google Hangout or some virtual means. We office in a co-work facility because we don't spend a lot of time in the office. And we have a few staff meetings. Most of the time we're in the field out here in these communities trying to make a difference. And so the reason why you saw so many people is because there's so many ways to engage with Atlanta Food and Farm. Most of those folks are independent contractors who work on specific projects and not, you know, so we don't carry a lot of overhead. And then we have a core of seven partners who own and govern the company, along with myself as the founding partner. And those folks are a lot like a law firm. Their job is to bring in new business, to manage the human resources, and to provide additional vision for what we're doing beyond what I had initially.
Fantastic, fantastic. I was when I was talking about AF2 before I introduced you, I was given some background on some of the things that I learned specifically at the open house that I was at the other night, and I was describing the school that was involved in the program. You had a young lady speak where they understood how to prepare food and they knew about food. They didn't know how to grow food, which you connected the dots, and they put together a you guys came in, and I assume how it went is teaching it. But I'd like you to talk about how that process worked, because apparently they had a lot of success with it, and they were able to feed people at an event at their school with the stuff that they had grown. And I'd like you to talk about that, please.
Yeah. I need some more milk. Sorry, my one year old.
You're
is
fine.
Out here.
You're fine. You're fine.
The idea is that what is our value proposition as a company? And it's basically we provide turnkey solutions to people who aspire to do something with food, whether it's a community garden, urban farm, or whatever, and We close the gap between their aspirations and their expertise. And so, you know, many times it's community groups, you know, who want to, you know, who are either inspired by Michelle Obama or something they've seen on the news about Eat Local, and they want that in their neighborhood. But, you know, someone may be no one that really knows how to get that done. And so we'll partner with them, oftentimes with no contract initially. We'll start out with a memorandum of understanding or MOU that frames up our relationship, and we go ahead to go start work with a promise of, you know, payment when the grant fund or whatever comes along, and we just try to get right to providing solutions for neighborhoods and communities. And so you know, we'll come in and find out what people really want, you know, have a number of charrettes or open conversations with the community, and once a clear project emerges, you know, we'll create a proposal around that. And if the resources are available to get started, you know, we take a retainer and get going. If they're not, then we put in as much as we can of sweat equity, pro bono hours, and try to help them do resource development or grant writing or fundraising, whatever they need to do to be able to cover our costs. Because we're not a nonprofit, we're a for profit. So at some point we do have to get paid, but it's not our only priority. We are truthfully and with integrity a multiple bottom line company. We're out here for more than just profit, so we do what we can as long as we can. And, you know, trying to make a living for ourselves at the same time.
Fantastic. I know that you have a lot of business relationships out there because, again, and not only business, but also you've been able to establish government relationships on the basis of your work. I saw it, and again, that's why I thought it was important that this came out. And I had asked you, tell me about the future, some of the plans that you're trying to do with this business model and the urban farming approach and, the social enterprise.
Yeah, the the thing that we think that's really unique about Atlanta Food and Farm is there's a lot of folks in the metro area growing food now. Atlanta's really top on the national scene around actual food being produced in a urban area. And then with recent legislation that was passed this month, actually, by Atlanta City Council and then signed by Mayor Reed, Atlanta has, which this legislation was an enabling legislation that authorized urban agriculture as an allowed land use in the zoning code for the city. Now, so the combination of this policy support and the ingenuity of many folks who have decided to do this even before it was quote-unquote legal to do it, Atlanta is in a really powerful position to be a leader in the country. And so what we tried to contribute to that, since there's already a lot of people doing direct production, we purposely kind of moved beyond that. And I myself, you know, I worked as an urban farmer in Atlanta quite before a number of other people even really knew it was a possibility back in 2005, you know, along with Rashid and Bobby Wilson and a few of the others that are leading the movement. I was growing food in a small CSA farm, 2.5 acres, in Southwest Atlanta in the West End, on some land owned by the Shrine of the Black Madonna Church. But, you know, I kept running up against barriers or limitations on what I could accomplish because the resource network wasn't well developed enough. And so that's why I decided to start Atlanta Food and Farm as a way of helping people like myself be more successful. And so how we do that is we focus on the bringing things to scale. And what that means in economics terms is, you know, one garden in a community is not going to compete with the way people currently get their food from Publix or Kroger's or Walmart. You know, those places have a whole system behind them that gets the food from the farmer to the consumer. And if you're going to seriously address food security, food sovereignty for a community, you're going to have to replicate some amount of that infrastructure that's controlled, owned, and benefits that neighborhood, that community. And so that scalability requires plan, much like any other community planning activity for housing development or a freeway or highway. You know, there is a planning process for serious food infrastructure. The way we currently have our food system was haphazardly planned in reaction to hunger threats and sort of capitalistic opportunities in our federal system. So, you know, that's one way to plan. Another way to plan it is to decide what your values are, greater transparency, better care of the ecology, better living wages, know who your farmer is, better nutrition. If you put all those things on the front end, you're going to have to design that from scratch because there's nothing in our current food infrastructure that really supports those outcomes. You know, high obesity rates, our exploitation of farm workers, all these things are predicated on a capitalist system that did not take in consideration these other things I just mentioned because they weren't priorities in the 1930s and 40s when our current policy infrastructure was put together to try to starve off communism from developing in this country or sure. hunger from Dust Bowl. So I'm sorry, I'm starting to get into a lecture.
But it's important because this, I mean, we are a political forum in that regard, and I one of the things, the disconnects I think there are is how important the food part of our world ties into politics. I mean, if you control the food, you control the world, essentially, if you get right down to it. So what you're, I mean, and you brought up the battle against communism. That is a historical fact that was used. And I think that gets missed with when you just talk about, you know, GMOs and things like that, and that's not what you're talking about. You're talking about an economic model that is taking all factors of the society that it's working in to bear, as opposed to, like you mentioned, it wasn't done before. So please go on.
Yep. Yeah, it's real. I mean, food is politics. That's why with Atlanta Food and Farm, as we, you know, we describe our business philosophy as something called civic agriculture. And this basically means that we do food with democracy in mind, that we're trying to reinforce democratic values with a small d, right? We want people participatory governance in neighborhoods, and that our food options, our food choices emerge out of
as widespread power and involvement as possible. And if you think about it, there's no more intuitive way in which to develop democracy than from our stomachs. Our gastric needs are a fundamental human basis upon which to think about power and control and influence about how decisions are made. And if we start there, education, we move to housing, we move to transportation, they all are more grounded, more accountable, and more relevant if we begin with food in mind. And so this is a very intentional approach that we're taking. That's not just about food. It's really about power. It's about equity. It's about revolution.
Absolutely. Let me take care of some business real quick. I just want to let everybody know, anybody wants to call in the Coffee Party Radio Politics Done Right, the call-in number is 646-929-2495. We'll try and get you in. We got a lot to talk about. We've got about 25 minutes left. Kwabena, can you take some questions if somebody calls in?
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
Fantastic. So I was looking at your website, and I put it in the chat room, everybody. I was looking at your website, just following along with you with the Survey of Agriculture. To me, I mean, I really think, and obviously we were having a discussion the other day about where you might want to go, because you had mentioned this as a model, and I kept bringing up places, and you said, no, they're already doing it. You know, so I happened to look at, as a matter of fact, a friend of mine, I mentioned you, Chicago, and a friend of mine is in Chicago this weekend, and they actually went into an urban farm area because, again, a lot of my friends and associates are into that. It's one of my across-the-aisle issues, as they say. And I thought of our conversation when I seen that. So I wanted to get your input on where you think it's needed or what your plans are, if you can talk a little bit about that.
Well, what are my plans for what now?
For expanding out of the Atlanta area.
Yeah, I mean, you know, first of all, you know, this is about local. So, you know, when we talk about expansion, it's something we do carefully because the idea is that, you know, we're not interested in trying to impose upon another community what we're doing here in Atlanta. I mean, you know, what Atlanta Food and Farm represents is a very organic, a very natural expression of my experience as a citizen in Atlanta. And that may or may not be a reality in all its shapes and forms in another place. Having said that, it was interesting enough, when we first started, we started out as a nonprofit. We were called Atlanta Metro Food and Farm Network, and you'll still see some stuff out there in that old name. And at the time when I was doing due diligence research, come to find out there was another nonprofit with a similar name in New Orleans called New Orleans Food and Farm Network. And the executive director of that organization, a guy named Sanjay Karad, reached out to him. We became good friends. And so we began to realize that we had the very same, similar idea, pretty much the exact same ideas about democracy and food. And so we started talking about trying to build a caucus of food activists who share these values, because there are a good number of those who don't. And I'm not saying that they're opposed to them, but they're not doing them as a priority. They're oftentimes putting in garden and farm projects as a silo operation, and don't really put a lot of effort in trying to be connected to the community's existing concerns. And so with that being said, there is an expansion that's sort of philosophical on one level, you know, trying to connect with those who also embrace this approach to the work, but then actually replicating the approaches that we've sort of proven here in Atlanta to be successful is something that we're considering right now. But even that expansion would be an outcropping of my relationship. So my hometown is Boston. I just spent a good amount of time there this past month, and come to find out there's a lot of interest in civic agriculture, so we may very well be launching a Boston Food and Farm shortly. And then there are other places that we have relationships or people in our network in. Glen, California, one of our partners moved there recently, Stephanie Radbill, so we're looking at possibly Oakland Food and Farm. I have family in Dallas, Texas, so, you know, Dallas is right. I spent some time there last year. They're really interested in what we're doing. The Slow Food Dallas is very active and looking for partners. There's a couple of guys, veterans from the Iraq War, who started a business called Eat Your Yard that really is interested in us helping them go to scale because they're growing food all around the city, but they don't have the distribution network to get it to restaurants and so forth. So I think it's possible that within the next year we could be in about 4 to 5 additional cities, again, only when we really see there's a role we can play, that we can contribute, and that we're not replicative or duplicative. So we're not going to go to someplace like Portland or even Houston, where I started, because those places are really well-developed and they're doing great work already.
Fantastic. And one other area I want to touch on, too, is how much involvement you have with schools and with children in this thing. Can you talk a little bit about that, please?
Say it one more time, Bobby.
One of the areas I wanted to touch on is your involvement with the children and schools with this model. I wanted you to talk about that, please.
Yeah. Working with young people is really central to what we're doing. And not from the sentimental point of view that you may think, you know, that, the poo-poo side of it, which, you know, I'm not poo-pooing. I mean, you know, certainly we all have a heart center for youth, you know, children of the future, sing the song, you know, kind of thing. But from a very pragmatic approach, you know, if we are going to really transform the way society deals with its food needs, the most logical place to start is with the future citizens of the society. And so we are interested in children and youth to seed that different thinking, different mentality as young as possible, and so that they own it early, that they make life decisions at all levels out of that position, that we help influence families through their children. And when a child has an experience of growing a vegetable and they own that process, they planted the seed, they cultivated it, they have a relationship with that plant that removes any kind of barrier that may have existed in their mind about consuming it prior to that, you know. And so I've seen children eat vegetables that their parents swore that they never would ever do because they grew that vegetable. And that primal experience in a child's life, teacher themselves or a CEO or a mother or father, and they begin to make all kinds of subtle, small, aggregate decisions in their life that on a totality basis can transform the way we do. There's many different kind of ways to make policy. One is to approach policymakers, elected officials, government. Another way is the way we vote with our pocketbooks, the choices we make as consumers. These in aggregate become societal policies. And so if we can get people to begin making those different decisions early, it's really key. A good friend of mine in the industry, Darren Jaffe, the founder of Farmer D Organics, he just wrote a book called Citizen Farmers. And I think we're on the same wavelength or brainlength when he's talking about the need to cultivate citizen farmers, people who see their citizenship through the lens of food. And you don't have to be a zealot. You know, you have a kitchen garden, you compost, you make sure you buy as much of your food from local farmers as possible. You get to know your farmer. You do those things, and everybody does 2 or 3 of them or 4 or 5 of them, and then we'll have just a whole different world within a generation.
Fantastic. Well, Quavon, I commend you and your organization and the people that are working with you. I think it's a completely – what's the word I'm looking for? I think it reaches across whatever aisles we have politically. It touches so many different aspects of our society, like you touched upon, from the standpoint of politics and economics and our future and democracy. And I'm glad that you're doing it here in Atlanta, of course, because I get to participate and help it along and also learn how to do a farm myself, which, as you know, I'm looking to do on my property. So I just wanted to make sure that everybody knows about your website. That is AtlantaFoodAndFarm.net. And you mentioned earlier the FoodLiteracyInstitute.com, if I remember correctly.
It's actually ATL, foodandfarm.net, not the whole word Atlanta spelled out for the website. And then, yeah, the Food Literacy Institute, foodliteracyinstitute.com.
ATL, I'm going to change that right now in the chat room.
ATL, food and farm. And spelled out A and B.
There we go. Now we're in there correctly. So if anybody wants to check out, please do. There's a lot of great information in there. It talks about, I think you'll be surprised. That's the thing that I was. I think that what you're doing is going to surprise people when they actually look at it, pull the covers off it, read what you're doing, listen to this interview, because we'll archive it, of course, and it'll be available on Coffee Party Radio forever, and promote it that way as well, and our whole community is going to know about it. I'm glad to know you, and I appreciate you coming on the show.
Yep. Likewise, Bobby, just want to testify about getting to know you. We met through the magic of Facebook, and I put out a call one day that we needed help with transportation of wood chips from one of our gardens to another site. And because you're the man you are, the kind of person you are, you responded and have helped several times us make these transportation issues. And then you, of course, chipped in for me personally to help move some stuff. So it's my first social media friendship, but it's been a powerful one, and I'm happy to have joined you for this event.
Great. Thank you so much, Kwabena, and I'll be seeing you soon.
All right. Take care, bud.
Take care. So 646-929-2495. I want to take care of some Coffee Party business quickly. There are other shows in the Coffee Party Network. We have on Thursdays, 12 o'clock Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern Time, we have Lunch with Loudon, with Janine Loudon and Debbie Lynn Molino. Wonderful show, has been going on for a long time. Monday nights we have Press One for Democracy, Dan Aronson, again, another wonderful show. All of the shows that go on Coffee Party promote civil discourse, transpartisan invitation, and participation. I'm glad to spend part of my Saturday with you guys. I appreciate Egberto Willis allowing me the opportunity to come on the show to talk about something I feel is very important. Again, I would like everybody to look into www.atlfoodandfarm.net. Take a look at what's going on. Urban farming at this kind of level is very important, I believe, to our society. And it certainly makes a statement, and it certainly gets people talking to each other about the problems of our society and trying to fix them, and using a market-based solution, which is so important. We talk about capitalism and free markets and market-based solutions in so many bad ways, and it's my belief that the reason that we do that is because so much of it is bad, and we don't have an opportunity to see it work properly. This model is working properly because it has the society and the community in its model to make sure that it is both noticed, the issues that are involved are important to it, and it is helping them get past them and make jobs and put money in people's pockets, put food on their table, and getting people together. So, again, I think it's a wonderful program. I'd like everybody to take a look at it. And on that note, I appreciate everybody listening. This is Bobby Rodrigo in for Egberto Willis, Politics Done Right. Everybody take care. Have a great rest of the day.